From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Coin Stephen Sanders is my guest. A television historian, Steve Sanders has written books about the Lawrence Welk Show, the Dick Van Dyke Show, and a fabulous book about the Judy Garland TV show. He's also the author of a classic work on Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz called Desilu. Written with Tom Gilbert, the book is now available in a new revised edition. Coin Stephen Sanders, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, this year marks the 100th anniversary of Lucille Ball's birth and the 60th anniversary, I believe, of her series, I Love Lucy. What did the television landscape look like when I Love Lucy arrived on the scene? Was I Love Lucy radically different than anything else?
Well, it was, and it's a very different time, and it just shows, I guess, how timeless the show is because it still holds up today, still stands up. But yeah, television was in its infancy back then. The show premiered in 1951. The pilot was sold to CBS the year before, and you know, I Love Lucy sort of revolutionized television. I don't know whether at the time whether it was quite specific that it had that idea, but certainly Desi Arnaz was a genius, and it worked out that Lucy had done a radio series for CBS, a domestic comedy called My Favorite Husband, and she'd done a lot of radio otherwise, and from the mid-40s on, early 40s, and it became known to people, her writers and her producer, that she really sort of thrived in front of an audience. And actually, our book begins, it's sort of a latter-day biography, it'd be the first time she went on stage to do a play called Dream Girl, that the producer and director, Herb Kenwith, realized that she actually came alive in live performances much more than you saw her in pictures and films. And so the CBS realized that she was so good in this domestic comedy, My Favorite Husband, they wanted to move the show to television because television, again, was in its infancy, and they wanted to take this vehicle to television. But the radio show had an actor named Richard Denning playing Lucy's husband, and Lucy campaigned. She wanted Desi Arnaz, who, well, of course, was her real-life husband, to play her on-camera husband. And, you know, interestingly, CBS balked and said no, because nobody would believe this swarthy Cuban with a thick accent could be married to this American sort of Scottish lass, you know, with red hair, Lucille Ball. And the irony, of course, was that they were married in real life. They were married for 10 years at that point. And so Lucy and Desi concocted this idea to do a vaudeville tour to various, they started in Chicago, a song and dance act in front of movie-going audiences to test whether the American public would accept Lucy and Desi as a real-life couple. And then if they did, that information certainly would be passed along to CBS to bolster their argument that the world would be able to accept Lucy and Desi as an on-camera couple. And the tour was very successful. And actually, later on, I Love Lucy, they took bits of the vaudeville tour, like Susie Sweet, Cuban Pete. They took things in the opening number, the clown outfit, where Lucy plays you know, the instrument wearing the trench coat. Those were bits from the vaudeville tour that they incorporated in I Love Lucy later on. But the I Love Lucy tour, the tour was so successful that CBS relented and allowed Lucy and Desi to play the on-camera couple, which became I Love Lucy. And they didn't know what to do with the title. Of course, they wanted Lucy in the title, but the I referred to Desi. So it was kind of a clever way of getting Desi first billing, but it was still Lucy's show that Lucy got billing by name. And that's really pretty much how the show started.
And when we see the original openings, they always say the Lucille Ball, Desi Arnaz show, I Love Lucy, right?
Yes, that's right.
Well, I have a couple of questions about that. Now, Lucy and Desi met on Broadway doing a show?
Met in Hollywood. Desi had done a Rodgers and Hart show called Too Many Girls.
Right.
And then he was brought out to California to do the film version, and Lucy happened to be an RKO contract player who was cast in the movie by accident, or not by accident, but by chance. So they met on the set of Too Many Girls in California, and it was sort of love at first sight. And so they had a very tumultuous romance, and then they both sort of told each other that the other was being unfaithful now and then, and they had all this, it was great passion, great arguments, great making up. It was probably, you know, I say it's probably the greatest love affair in show business history of the 1950s. It was tumultuous. It was large in life, and they were divorcing almost. They got together one time. They had their divorce was going to be set, but they slept together the night before the divorce was going to be granted. So of course it was annulled. It was a deliberate act on their part, and they couldn't stay away from each other. At the same time, they always had these great fights. Lucy would accuse Desi of looking at other women, or more than looking, and and so he was a flatterer, and or so she thought, and so that just added more fuel to the fire and more passion to their romance. So they got remarried in 1940, 1950, to reestablish their vows. And so I Love Lucy they created as the means to bring them both together, because that way Desi could stop touring with his band. Primarily on the East Coast, and Lucy could remain in California. And I Love Lucy, again, it revolutionized television, because Lucy wanted to be in California, and then Desi did too, to do I Love Lucy, but CBS wanted to do the show in New York, because that's where shows were done in front of an audience. And so to make things work for them, they were the first situation comedy to be filmed in front of a live audience. They took a soundstage and revamped it to allow an audience to be there when they filmed the show. And unlike kinescopes, which were, there were live shows and they were shot on kinescope, which was sort of a 60-millimeter projector put in front of a television screen, that they would be filmed on 35-millimeter movie stock, feature film stock. So it was shot with motion picture values, with motion picture lighting and makeup and so forth. And that, coincidentally or not, again, it was Desi's genius, that created the syndication market, because for the first time, they were able to stockpile these shows. They weren't just aired on CBS once or maybe twice in kinescopes, the second time in a kinescope. They were as fresh the second, third, fourth, fifth, or 20th, or 100th time because they were filmed in front of a live audience. And so that kind of created the off-network syndication market as we still know it today. So, again, whether it was by design because they want a solution to the problem of being together in 1951, that created the whole syndication market. So that alone revolutionized television, in addition to I Love Lucy being the first camera, three-camera technique. It was the first time three cameras were used to film the show in front of a live audience, and the show was put together by an editor to get the proper moments that we would see on the television screen.
We're talking with Steve Sanders, and he's the author of a book called Desi Lou, the story of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. You were talking about the reluctance of CBS to hire Desi Arnaz because they thought that the audiences might not accept Lucy as being attracted to this guy. But were they also just, in general, opposed to having a person of color as a lead on their television show?
Well, I think you're right. I think that there might have been some unsaid racism that was never mentioned specifically, but I think that hiding behind the phrase of the public won't accept perhaps was CBS's sort of saying that they didn't think that America or the CBS itself was reluctant to accept a couple that one of the people would be of another color. So I think because Desi was Cuban, he was born in Cuba, and came to America. His father was, actually, Desi came from aristocracy. He was his father was mayor of Santiago, and they were forced to America because of the revolution. So they came out. They were people of privilege, but when they came to America, he had nothing. He was a self-made man who was cleaning bird cages when he first moved here. So it's ironic that if there was racism, and there probably was of that of that time, that Desi came from aristocracy of very, very kind of exclusive Cuban lineage.
Now, when you're talking about them filming Desi, I Love Lucy in a film style, and I know they eventually had the Desi Lou Studios, which was in the old RKO studio.
Yeah.
Did they start filming it there, or did they film it somewhere else at first?
No, excuse me. They originally filmed I Love Lucy in a reconverted soundstage in Hollywood. And they filmed there for quite some time, and then later on, when Desi bought RKO, then they moved their production facilities to the RKO lot, which he renamed Desi Lou. And it was interesting because, as I said before, that Lucy had been a contract player at RKO. So, you know, talk about going full circle. She wound up owning with Desi, RKO, where she had been like a $75 a week contract girl back in the 1930s. So perhaps it was sweet revenge. I don't know because, you know, excuse me, Lucy was cast in pretty much, well, she was known as the Queen of the Bees. And so she was cast sort of in one minor RKO movie after the next. And RKO, I don't think RKO ever gave her her due, either as a dramatic actress or as a comedian. So it was interesting that she wound up owning the shop, you know, when Desi bought RKO in 1957.
Well, you know, once she got on I Love Lucy, she became a very physical comedian. She didn't do that kind of comedy at RKO?
Very little. She, I think the first inkling of it, when she was at Columbia, she did a Three Stooges short. And then later on, she did, there are some bits of, that she did in some pictures. She did a Marx Brothers movie called Room Service. But not really. I think, and later on, towards the end of the 40s, when they realized that she was so adept at physical comedy, she did a movie, for Columbia called Fuller Brush Girl, and then she did a couple other movies where she did some physical comedy. But it wasn't until I Love Lucy that she really came into her own, and I agree with some people who say that she was the greatest female clown in history. I can't think of any other actress or comedian that was. Lucy pretty much had it all at her zenith. I mean, she was absolutely beautiful. She could deliver a line. She could do comedy. She could do drama. She was, you know, a really wonderful actress. But she also was extraordinary at physical comedy. And I don't think that before then, and even now, I can't think of a beautiful female who could do the kind of physical comedy as fearlessly that Lucille Ball did. You know, Lucille was not afraid to look funny. Or look outrageous, or, you know, fall in a wine vat, or all the things that happen to, or Vita Vita Vegemite, all the things that kind of, whatever, that Lucille wasn't afraid. She was always a beautiful woman, but she wasn't afraid to look unattractive because the material always came first, the comedy always came first.
Well, what kind of a person was she offstage? I know that she was all business on the set. She was the boss on the set, yeah?
Well, I think that was one of the surprises that we had in writing the book, is that I went into researching and writing the book thinking, oh, because I grew up like everybody else, loving I Love Lucy and loving Lucy Ricardo, because who wouldn't, you know? But yet Lucille, we found out that Lucille Ball was very different than Lucy Ricardo, and Lucille was tough. She was could be abrasive. She kind of had a showgirl of the 1930s. Sort of personality, wisecracking, but she's not funny. She would say to people very freely, I'm not funny, my writers think funny. So she wasn't one, she wasn't a raconteur, she didn't tell stories, she really wasn't funny, quick-witted, but she could act funny things out, act out funny bits, but she wasn't funny, and she could be abrasive. Some people, as we have stories in the book, that she could be cruel to people at times because she wouldn't know how to express herself. That she would be very tactless and abrupt when she didn't even sometimes mean to be, but she had a hard time expressing her feelings or expressing emotions. And she could, and on the set, she could be quite the dictator. And we have startling stories where later on when Desi wasn't in the picture, she had nobody to sort of control her in a sense of, Desi was a great filter for her. Kind of, he brought out the softer qualities in Lucille. But when Desi wasn't around or Desi had exited the picture, that she kind of became very hardened and tough. And she was very much a control. I hate to use the word control freak, but she was very controlling. And I think that if she couldn't control her marriage to Desi, if she couldn't control her children who were getting older, the one part of her life she could control was the soundstage where her show was filmed. And I think that that's where the stories we have of her interacting with Richard Burton, Elizabeth Taylor, Sammy Davis Jr., Tula Bankhead, where she could be quite difficult to people. That we have stories where somebody said she would tell Richard Burton how to read Shakespeare, She would give it to a banker. She would snap her fingers in front of her and give her line readings. Other things, too, where she would, I don't know if I can say this, but she, Joan Crawford, she drove Joan Crawford to tears, and Joan Crawford told the director, people say that I'm a bitch. Lucy Goodall bitch me any day of the week. And she said crying, because Lucy could be really tough. And, you know, I think that in Lucy's favor, I was to kind of, you know, we try to look at somebody's life, not just what they did, but what was behind it. And I think that in many ways Lucy was insecure. She didn't trust anybody. After Desi left, she felt betrayed, and I think that she a wall came down where she didn't let people in. I think that she just was afraid to trust, and she was getting older. She was, you know, 50 when I Love Lucy ended, the hour show. She was nearing 50, and, you know, I think that that kind of all took its toll, where she became more and more difficult as she got older.
We're talking with Steve Sanders, and he's the author of Desi Lou, the story of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. Well, you know, you mentioned that Desi was a genius, and I think although people love the Lucy show and Here's Lucy and whatever else it was that she did after I Love Lucy, I think no one would disagree that those shows are inferior to I Love Lucy. And is that because Desi wasn't there?
I think in large part, yeah. I think that I Love Lucy was sort of, there are very few times in life or certainly in show business when, say you want to say a television series, where everything is right, it's the right moment, the right people, the right time, the right writers, the right talent, the right time when the public is they may not even know it, hungry for a certain kind of programming. But I think that maybe you could say that I Love Lucy was like that, Dick Van Dyke was like that, Mary Tyler Moore was like that, Cheers, Seinfeld. There are probably maybe a handful of shows where you can say, you know, that they're just extraordinary above the norm, where everything was right. And I think that certainly I Love Lucy was maybe the first example in television history where everything was right. And I think that, yeah, I think that Desi not being in the picture, because he really could work with writers. He had Desi was deeply flawed with his drinking and with other things, but he was a people person, and he had charm. People loved him, respected him. The writers would, you know, work even longer and harder, because he would finesse in a good way, not manipulate, but you know, he would encourage and support and everything else, the writers and the production people. And without him around, I think that he was invaluable to Lucy. And, I think that without him there and Lucy running the show, that was a big, emptiness that, Lucy had in her life and her career afterwards. You know, I think there's also the fact that Lucy was 40 years old when I Love Lucy started, and after trying to have a baby several times unsuccessfully, then she found out she was pregnant, and she had Lucy Arnaz, you know, became Lucy Arnaz. And so Lucy Arnaz told us, you know, in 1 month, after being in Hollywood for 20 years, Lucille Ball had a hit show and a new baby. You know, who would have thought, you know, that everything happened after Lucille had been kicking around Hollywood for nearly 20 years. Success came to her so late in life at 40, and then she didn't want to give it up. And I think that part of it was that later on, when she came back with the Lucy show and Here's Lucy and then Life with Lucy, you know, right at the end of her life, that she didn't allow her character to age, you know. And I think that that may be part of the downfall, is that what works and what's attractive or what plays best when somebody is 40 who really can play early 30s, that when somebody is 70 or 60, it's not quite the same. It's not maybe age-appropriate. And I also think the scripts weren't as good, because Desi wasn't there to bring out the best in the writers or find the best writers by that point. So I think that the people, you know, I grew up watching the later shows, but I think that maybe in large part people watch those later shows out of habit or out of love for Lucy or love for I Love Lucy, and it kind of continued with the later shows in the 60s. But I don't even think that Lucy would even say that the later shows equaled I Love Lucy. I don't think that she would ever really say that. I Love Lucy was this magical moment in time.
I think one of her most misguided projects was her film version of the musical MAME.
Yes.
Where they had her in such a gauzy shot every time they showed her, so that she would look not as old as she was. I think everybody thought maybe they were going blind, slowly going blind.
That's right. Yeah. That there was she was too old for that. She just had a skiing accident, so she was on pain medication. She was hampered physically. She couldn't move the way that she could before she, you know, as far as since she had to dance them. She couldn't sing and she couldn't dance, and yet in this movie MAME, she was supposed to carry a picture and sing and dance. And she was really too old, and her health wasn't well enough to support that kind of thing. But that the irony was that Lucille didn't see any of that before she wanted to do the film, because to Lucille, doing a film meant you were a star. And while she never diminished her television stardom, that she was of the old school. You know, when you're a movie star, you're a real star. And she was just thrilled. She thought that MAME would open up all new vistas for her in terms of film roles and everything else. And she was, again, that there wasn't anybody around like Desi to tell her, no, don't do it, or no, do it this way, because everybody was afraid of her by that point. And people wouldn't really be honest with her. And so she had no safety net.
Now,
the MAME was a huge, probably the biggest misfire of her latter-day career, yeah.
Well, now of course, that last series, that was also bad. But anyway, Desi Arnaz, we just had, having said that Lucy without Desi was inferior, but Desi without Lucy, he didn't do anything after
that. He floundered too. That Desi was unfortunately, you know, caught up by the pressures of running Desi Lu, which became a multi-million dollar enterprise, and, you know, and being on camera playing Ricky Ricardo, he was really unsung. And, you know, you mentioned before about underlying racism. I don't know whether part of why he never got his proper due is because he was Cuban, because he wasn't born in America. I don't know, because he never got an Emmy Award. He never got a Life Achievement Award. And Lucy, to her credit, even after they were divorced, always said, it's not me, it was Desi. He was the genius. He was the decision maker. He was the runner. She never, ever took credit for what he did. But I think that Desi was kind of, that might have also increased Desi's drinking, because he wasn't given, he always felt he wasn't given the due by the public or by his own peers in the business, at Emmy time or even other times too. He was always the Cuban, you know, and he would joke and say, well, you know, once he tripped, Lucy was tripped to rehearsal, tripped over a cable, and he said, amigos, better be careful, because she trips, you know, anything happens to her, we're all in the shrimp business. You know, he would be the first to joke about his role and her role, that she was the star. But I think that got to him. I think, especially with the Cuban male ego. And I think that also increased his womanizing, because he needed to, you know, make a statement in one way or the other. And I think that probably added to the drinking and the womanizing, because it was him, as we would say today, acting out. And, you know, and he did, because he didn't get his proper due.
You know, I think people are surprised to know that there's only 6 or 7 seasons of I Love Lucy, because it's, you know, it's been on the air over and over again for so long. What was, and they were divorced right at the end, I guess, of their...
At the end of the hour shows. They did a season or so of the one-hour comedy specials, and Lucy filed for the divorce the day after the last special was aired, because she didn't want to jeopardize the contract.
Now, what was their relationship like for the rest of their lives?
Well, that was a surprise in writing the book and researching, interviewing people, because from what we were able to gather, that they spoke every day after the divorce, every day for the rest of their lives. And when Desi wound up being diagnosed with cancer, Lucille insisted that Desi move into her guest house, which she lived in with her husband, Gary Morton, and Desi moved in there. And Lucy tended to him while he was sick from cancer. And that's what I'm saying. It was a great love affair that never died. I think it was impossible for them to live together as husband and wife, but that doesn't mean they didn't love each other. You know, and Lucy remarried and Desi remarried, but, you know, it wasn't, to either person, it wasn't the same kind of marriage that each had with each other, as far as with Lucy with Desi and Desi with Lucy. I think that it was passion. It was a great love of each other's life. And the story we have in the book, it ends the last chapter of this first edition of the original book, of the new edition, that when Desi was dying, Lucy Arnaz made the call with Lucille Ball there and said, you better talk to him now. This may be your last chance. And Lucy Arnaz could only hear, you know, what her mother was saying, but Desi couldn't speak anymore. He was so sick that all he could do was listen. And I would get emotional when I would think of the story or even read it in the book that I wrote, that all Lucille could say to Desi over and over was, I love you, I love you. She would say it in different ways with different intonations. I love you, I love you, I love you, with tears running down her face. And she was the last person to talk to him before he slipped into a coma and died 2 days later. And then Lucy Arnaz said that she happened to realize afterwards that they had the conversation on November 30th, which would have been the wedding anniversary. So talk about coming full circle, you know.
Well, it's one of the great books on the history of television. It's called Desi Lu, The Story of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz. And the author is our guest, Coyne Stephen Sanders. And thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. Enjoyed it very much. Thanks so much.
Well, that's all the time we have for From the Bookshelf this week. I hope you'll come back and see us again next week, when we'll have another wonderful program for you. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on iTunes and Facebook. I want to thank Coyne Stephen Sanders, author of Desi Lu, The Story of Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, for being my guest this week. The production of From the Bookshelf is aided and abetted by Francis Venegas. Thank you, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.